Privileged to have our brother Dan Larson speak to us this morning, and we're looking forward to a blessing. And his topic is a subject that we are cautioned about throughout the Bible. His title is Idols and Idol Worship. Idols and Idol Worship. Brother Dan.
Thank you, Brother Joe. Idols and idol worship. Our theme text is taken from 1 John 5:21, and it reads, "Little children, keep yourselves from idols. Man, formed in the image of God, naturally desires to pay homage to his Creator. Not only is it natural, but it is also highly to be praised. Man should want to humbly acknowledge his nothingness and that God is everything and that he is highly exalted and worthy of all praise." King David in Psalms 100 phrases it thus, and we will be using the New English translation for this. He says, "Acclaim the Lord, all men on earth. Worship the Lord in gladness. Enter into his presence with songs of exaltation. Know the Lord is gladness. Enter his presence with songs of exaltation. Know that the Lord is God. He has made us, and we are his own. His people, the flock which he shepherds. Enter his gates with thanksgiving, and his courts with praise. Give thanks and bless his name. For the Lord is good, and his love is everlasting. His consistency endures to all generations." And so our hearts should be in accord with this psalm as we revel in our Lord's goodness as he has requested through the prophet David. But our Lord also has said in Exodus 34:14, "For you shall not worship any god before the Lord, whose name is jealous, he is a jealous God." This is one of the 10 principal commandments which embody the standards of perfection for both humans and spiritual beings. And thus seeing idolatry in any form is supremely evil. Sometimes that must never be harbored in any creature. Every knee must bow and every tongue must confess that Jehovah is Lord in heaven and earth. Idolatry or idol worship is defined as setting up something or someone that takes the place of our God Jehovah. The bowing down in worship to another entity which should be reserved only for our Father which art in heaven. And as we discuss this topic today, brethren, we are to remember that evil always is progressive. One wrong always leads to another. Let me repeat that because it's so vital to our understanding that evil is always progressive. It never stops just when you at the very thought of it, but one wrong always leads to another. When we worship, we are building an altar and giving our attention to the object of our adoration, setting our hearts upon it. Of course, we no longer build physical altars, but we do set up worship in our hearts. As the Lord's children, we must have to be most interested in examining this idea. Each of us should question his or her own heart, asking, "To whom do I render worship? To whom do I sacrifice my time, my talents, my money, my affection? Honest answers to these questions will give us an indication of our spiritual health and closeness to the Lord. You know, there are many incidences of idolatry in the scriptures, and an exhaustive study is impossible in a discourse. But we will this morning concentrate our thoughts on the making of the golden calf in Exodus, the 32nd chapter. Exodus, the 32nd chapter, and we'll be using the New American Standard Translation most of the time. The setting, you'll remember, is at Mount Sinai, some 40 days after the people entered into covenant relationship with the Lord when Moses received the law from God. God had delivered the people through many inflicting the 10 plagues upon Egypt and miraculous parted the waters of the Red Sea and brought them back again to drown Pharaoh and his army. He had healed the waters at Marah and had provided their daily manna for subsistence. You know, just think. So many physical manifestations of God's care and love and protection in such a short space of time for this people. We are often shocked that they could become so stiff-necked and have failed to recognize God's constant control. And now they were violating one of the most fundamental of the commandments that they had just so recently vowed to obey, the making of a graven image. How strange to have forgotten in such a short space of time. How strange that only 40 days should pass and that the people should become so fearful as to demand the making of a calf of gold to worship in God's place. Let's turn to the account in Exodus, the 32nd chapter. And the chapter is broken down into seven parts. 1, verses 1 through 6, Aaron and the calf. 2, verses 7 through 14, the Lord and Moses in the mount. 3, verses 15 to 18, Moses and Joshua. And 4, verses 19 and 20, the breaking of the tablets of the law. Number 5, Aaron, verses 21 to 24, Aaron's defense to Moses. Number 6, verses 25 to 29, the Levites side with the Lord and execute his judgment. And 7, verses 30 to 35, Moses again pleads for the people before the Lord. Brother Russell, commenting in reprints 1835, he comments on verse 1 and he says, "This tendency to idolatry on the part of any people, and especially of Israel, manifested itself on various occasions, and it may seem strange to many, but had its root both with Israel and with other nations in the depravity of the fallen nature, which gravitates towards sin and yet seeks to silence the protests of conscience with the sanction of religion." He continues and he says, "Man is naturally inclined to worship in his fallen condition. However, it is not love or gratitude or reverence or superiority of wisdom, power, and goodness, but superstitious fear that prompts it. He desires to do evil. Conscience protests, and fear and separation suggest the joining of the desired evil practices with the form of worship, which seeks a central figure, that is, a God. This God is supposed to have such characteristics as the evil mind of his inventor and worshiper desires. Brother Russell continues and he says, or power or moral worth, but it is the willful and sinful devotion to degrading self-satisfaction. Let me repeat that. He says that it is the willful and sinful devotion to degrading self-gratification. It is clear, he says, therefore, that idolatry is a synonym of evil, and it precludes the recognition of the one true God, whose purity and holiness are directly adverse to the spirit of idolatry. End of quote. Israel, in our exchange, justified herself by questioning whether Moses was still alive. He had been gone for 40 days and 40 nights. He most likely was dead since he was their link to Jehovah, their God. They needed another link, one of their own choosing. Aaron wasn't a strong enough character to repel the action. Tradition relates that both Aaron and Hur were left in charge, as we find earlier in chapter 24, verse 14. And that since Hur isn't mentioned in this picture, it is reasoned that he did resist the people's demands and was put to death. And thus Aaron, desiring to avoid further bloodshed, acquiesced to their demands. Oh, what folly, brethren, when we begin to rationalize in trying to avoid bloodshed. Aaron caused great damage to the people, and many more died as a result. And so when we begin to reason from the standpoint of evil rather than from righteousness, should be the principle of our life, we get into the most trouble, brethren. When evil presents itself, we must repel it. Just like Jesus' answer to Satan when he was tempted, he says, get thee behind me, or it is written, by resisting, he was not compromised. Verse 6. And so the next day they rose up early and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Here the people were mixing religion and sinful pleasures. The New English Standard Version says, and they gave themselves up to revelry or singing and dancing. Cencido, a Hebrew commentary, comments that it was this dancing and singing which usually figured in religious celebration of heathen peoples, and thus probably a sensibility and worldliness mixed with worship, using eroticism to stir up unholy desires. Fornication was part of most heathen religions' services and of idol worship. In fact, the priests had prostitutes for the specific purpose, and the Israelites, unfortunately, followed suit. And thus we see one evil progressively followed another. And this is the dangers of mixing religion and worldliness becomes obvious. One evil begets another, and often as a result of putting something or someone in God's place in our hearts and lives. Not often do we go to such graphic extremes as in our example here, but there are many forms of principle that we do violate. Remember, Babylon is considered a harlot. In reprints 59:34, Brother Russell refers to one of Aesop's fables, and it's called The Blacksmith and the Donkey, which goes like this. On a cold, frosty morning, a donkey pushed his nose in at the door of the blacksmith's shop, where it was warm from the glowing fire. The blacksmith said to the donkey, "Don't put your nose in here, get out." The donkey replied, "Oh, you are so stingy. I am only trying to get my nose warm." Presently, the blacksmith looked around and saw that the donkey had now his whole head in. The blacksmith said, "Now get out, will you?" But the donkey pleaded that he was only getting a little breath of warm air and that his head surely would not trouble the blacksmith. And while the blacksmith again looked about and he saw that the donkey was now halfway into the shop, then he shouted, "Get out, get out." But the donkey still insisted that he was only trying to get a little warm, and the blacksmith once again yielded. And by he looked again, and he saw that the donkey was altogether in the shop. Then he sprang forward, shouting, "Get out, get out." And thereupon, the donkey said triumphantly, "Ho, ho, ho. Which one of us will get out?" And he thereupon turned around and began to kick at the blacksmith, and the donkey was now in full control. Applying the principle of the fable to the new creature in the flesh, the lesson becomes obvious. Continuing in Exodus 32, verses 7 through 14, Moses pleads for Israel, functioning as a mediator between him. He argues that their enemies would now be able to mock the Lord by saying that the only reason he delivered them from Egypt was to destroy them in the wilderness. Verse 9 says, "And the Lord said to Moses, 'I have seen this people, and behold, they are an obstinate people.'" The King James Version says, "a stiff-necked people," an allusion to that of being of an ox that would not bend under the yoke of servitude and thus therefore became useless. This is an apt illustration of someone who refuses to learn from their experiences or from those whom the Lord chooses to instruct them. You know, brethren, we Christians can sometimes be stubborn. Yes, even stiff-necked. We bristle at the very thought of a change in our course. We feel we have been doing the Lord's will, and sometimes we miss the real lesson that the Lord is trying to speak to us. When he speaks to us through the scripture and at meetings for some admonition from the brethren, or from even the itching of our conscience. Let us master the attitude of humility, having before our minds that, you know, we might, just might, be wrong in our reasoning or behavior. Brethren, think of that. We may just be wrong in our reasoning and our behavior. It is only then when we are in a state of mind to hear what the Lord might be wanting to tell us. Verse 13, "Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, thy servants of whom thou didst swear by thyself and didst say to them, 'I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven, and all this land which I have spoken, I will give you to you and your descendants, and they shall inherit it forever.'" Here Moses reminds the Lord that of the faithfulness of the fathers and the covenant which he had made with them. Moses was successful, and the Lord relented from destroying the people then and there. And so the Lord changed his mind about the harm which he would do to his people. In the next section, verses 15 to 18, Moses joins Joshua in descending the mountain to the point where they could hear the uproar in the camp. Joshua thought it must be a battle. But can you imagine the noise that must have been? But Moses knew better and answered with the facts. It is idolatry and gross fornication, an orgy in the name of Jehovah using an idol. The next section is probably the most emotional portion of the entire passage. In verses 19 and 20, and it came to about that as soon as Moses came near to the camp, that he saw the calf and the dancing. And Moses' anger burned, and he threw the tables of the law from his hands and shattered them at the foot of the mountain. And he took the calf which they had made and burned it with fire and ground it to powder and scattered it over the surface of the water and made the sons of Israel drink it. You know, brethren, can we imagine how he felt after spending the last 40 days and 40 nights in the presence of the Lord? Is it any wonder that when he came upon the scene and seeing his people, they acted with such emotion and broke the tablets of the law? These people didn't deserve such a gift. And then he proceeded to destroy that odious calf. Oh, what righteous indignation. Brethren, think for a moment. How would you or I have responded? In antitype, Jesus finds the same thing happening when he returned to the earth at the second advent. He comes down to claim the people. And what does he find? They are poor and blind and naked. And he too breaks his relationship with them and casts off those who have committed idolatry and fornication. Revelations 3:15-18. But returning back to Exodus 32. Verses 21 through 24. Then Moses said to Aaron, what did the people do to you that you have brought such great sin upon them? And Aaron said in his defense, do not let the anger of the Lord burn. You know this people yourself, that they are prone to evil. For they said to me, make us a God for us who will go before us. For this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And I said to them, whoever has, and Aaron speaking back to Moses, and I said to them, whoever has any gold, let him tear it off. And so they gave it to me, and I threw it into the fire. And out came this calf. Brethren, there are two basic issues here to focus and so that we can glean the lessons. First, the people had not truly placed God in his correct role and in their minds and in their hearts. They had, in a way, used Moses as an idol and were only worshiping Jehovah through him, Moses. And secondly, Aaron did not stand firm before the people, but he permitted them to sin. Aaron's answer was oh so typical. They made me do it. I had this gold and the calf just sort of appeared. He couldn't help it. It just happened. Oh, brethren, How many times have we used the same excuse to excuse ourselves in our actions? I had to do it for the kids. The family wouldn't understand. Oh, I just didn't think. Circumstances forced me. We must be honest to ourselves and to God by taking responsibility for our own actions. We cannot blame others nor circumstances for our own decisions. In verses 25 to 29, Moses clears the air and calls all of Israel who do love the Lord when he said, "Come unto me." And the Levites responded. And this brings to mind in the antitype in Revelation 18:4, when the Revelator says, "I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you may not receive of her plagues." And so God's people come out of Christendom, and from the standpoint and from the subsequent troubles that will come upon Babylon. The slaying of the people by the Levites pictures the destruction of those who were claiming to be Christians in the antitype. And another picture, the parable of the wheat and the tares in Matthew 13 in the 40th verse says, "And the tares were bundled and burned." And in Revelation 16, they were destroyed by the plagues. It is those spiritual Israelites who had committed idolatry and fornication, substituting false doctrines such as the Trinity, hell, or the immortal soul, and the systems held a great place in their heart instead of God. Returning back to Exodus, the 32nd chapter, in verse 30 to the end of the chapter is our last section. And let's especially note verses 31 and 32, which are the key point of our lesson. And I quote, "Then Moses returned to the Lord and said, Alas, this people has committed a great sin, and they have made a god of gold for themselves. But now, if thou wilt forgive their sin, and if not, please blot me out from thy book, which thou hast written." Moses here again intercedes for the people, and so that God would not destroy them completely, and ask the Lord to forgive, and if not, to blot him out also. Oh, what a great love Moses had for his people, that he would put his own life on the line for them. Reminds us so much of what the Apostle Paul said in Romans 9:3, where he also would be willing to lose the honor of being in the church class if it would have the effect upon the nation of Israel to turn them to Christ. In Ezekiel, in Exodus 32-35, we find the Lord does forgive the people, but in accordance with his attribute of justice, he required a just retribution and punishment. And this principle, brethren, is always in force. Remember, neither we are immune to this principle. God will not be mocked. In another way, remember that idol worship and idolatry will be punished. Idol worship and idol idolatry will be punished. In the remaining time, we would like to explore two present-day idols of the Christian, remembering that idolatry is an inert and undue respect in homage, reverence, or devotion paid to any person, system, or thing aside from the Lord. The first is covetousness. Brother Russell in Reprints 23:40 said that someone once said that covetousness is like drinking salt water out from the sea. It only increases the thirst. In Colossians 3:5, it says, therefore, consider members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. Paul used the term greed, translated covetousness in the King James, and covetousness implies discontent. If therefore it generally lies at the bottom of all disloyalty to God, when we become discontent with our present condition. Satan was the first to covet and or grasp after the things belonging to God, and thereby entered into sin, as we see from Isaiah, the 14th chapter, and verses 12 to 14, which read, O, have you fallen from heaven, O star of the morning, son of the dawn? You have been cut down to the earth, you who have weakened the nations, because you said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God, and I will sit on the mount of the assembly in the recesses of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, and I will make myself like the Most High. Brethren, how did Satan even come up with this idea that he could be the same as Jehovah, his creator? Isaiah continues and he says, nevertheless, you shall be thrust down to Sheol, to the recesses of the pit. Oh, brethren, Lucifer was beautiful and good and loving and gracious to God until he let covetousness become an idol that defiled the whole. Remember, if it happened to Lucifer, who was perfect, it could thus happen also to us who are imperfect. So we might think of what are some of the things that we might find ourselves beginning to covet and thus become as worshiping as an idol. Oh, you know, nothing I am saying is new, but it bears repeating. One, obviously, material things, positions in the world or on the job, friendships or relationships with worldly people. In the ecclesia or amongst the brethren, friendships and relationships belonging to others or honors not due us. And we can go on and on. But remembering that contentment is the opposite of covetousness, Paul gives us a secret in Philippians 4:11-13. Philippians 4:11-13, when he says, not that I speak from want, but I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity in any and every circumstance. I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both in having abundance and suffering or need. I can do all things through Him which strengtheneth me. Our morning resolve closes with, you remember, trusting myself to the divine care and the providential ruling of all my interests for my highest welfare. I will seek not only to be pure in heart, but to repel all anxiety, all discontent, all discouragement. I will neither murmur nor repine, and what the Lord's providence may permit. Why? Because faith can firmly trust Him, come what may. Because faith can firmly trust Him, come what may. Another idol we wish to consider today is one that hits the closest to home and probably the hardest to control. Can you guess? It's ourselves. We ourselves. David said, "Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin my mother did conceive me." Psalms 51:5. Mankind is all sinful and truly cannot help himself. We all have inherited weaknesses. Brethren, we all are selfish to one degree or another. On this topic, in Reprints 22:99, Brother Russell says the following, where he says, another idol is self. Its worship has a very ignoble and debasing effect upon its worshipers. It is worshipped under various forms and names: pride, selfish ambition, self-esteem, boastfulness, love of show, tyranny, unreasonable self-will, boastfulness to show in the love of show, and names these gratification of other passions, gluttony and drunkenness, end of quote. We stop to think about these things that we fight about every single day of our lives. You know, brethren, we usually think of the idol itself as only in the forms just mentioned. Not only in the forms just mentioned, but in Reprints 51:13, Brother Russell discusses a more subtle form of self-worship when he terms it false humility and a lack of proper self-esteem. You know, some of us deprecate our own talents and exaggerate our own blemishes, such as humility. If is a blessing only if it leads back to God. But a lack of an honest assessment of our own potential has held back many who could have otherwise been used by the Lord in His service. Many a man is a beggar or a thief because of such a lack. You know, he thinks of himself, he says, "I am nobody," and everybody knows it. He hangs his head in shame, having a guilty look without having committed a crime. And thus he is treated accordingly. Oh, but you might ask, oh, how is this idol worship? Well, the whole idea is self. Self. We put our distorted ideas in place of the Lord's promises to us. Oh, brethren, He cares. And if we put our hand into whatever is His will, that he puts in front of us with all of our might, we will. Do you think we will discover a develop abilities that which we know we do not have? Oh no. But yes, we might think it's either yes or no. The idea is to give the Lord the opportunity to help us to serve Him and use the talents which we may have undeveloped so that they can grow. When we give up because, oh, it's too hard, or nobody cares what I do, we are putting self in the way of growth. We may have 10 talents when we believed we only had 5. Or we may have 5 when we only believed we have 1. Or we may only have 1, but now we can use it to its fullest. Brethren, let God be the judge. Remember, it is God who is at work in you and in I to both will and to work for His good pleasure. Philippians 2:13. Fighting to not to be overcome with idols will be a lifelong journey and a battle. New ones will crop up in our lives continually as we go through its various phases. As we gain spouses or children or homes, they will vie for the attention we owe to the Lord. And as we continue in our jobs, it will constantly try to poke its head into our lives and take over from that which belongs to God. Outside interests will become more appealing, and our flesh will try to regain whatever ground it may have been lost in its battle to the new creature. Brethren, remember that with the Lord's help and Jesus' merit, we can overcome the idols of self and self-interest. We must wear ourselves out in the Lord's service and cause in order to gain the prize. And brethren, just think. Close your eyes for a moment. If we are faithful, we can spend not only 40 days and nights on the mountain which Moses spent with the Lord, but eternity. That's what He has promised us, to be eternally with our Lord and with our God, Jehovah. Oh, brethren, we trust that we have whetted your spiritual appetites to look further into this subject of idolatry in order to keep from setting up anything in our hearts and lives, and to ruthlessly knock down and destroy any that we find in there. And as children of the Lord, let us keep ourselves from idols. And may the Lord add His blessing.